Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming here to learn about what's new for developers in Windows 8.1. At a high level, I have a lot to cover. There's roughly about 5,000 new APIs in Windows 8.1, and I'm going to try to talk about every one of those. No, not really. So I had to pick and choose what I thought would be good to talk about. I'm going to try to cover the breadth, but at the same time doing some work to go deep in certain areas that I think might be interesting. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. So as I said, there's a lot of work that we've done in the platform, and some of it is API work, but there are also some new concepts that I need to talk about because they impact some of the API work that I'm going to talk about. So this is a laundered list of everything I want to touch on, at least at some level, in this talk. And so with that, let's go ahead and dive into really the new APIs for store development. And there are, like I said, about 5,000 of them. So Windows 8, this is what the landscape looked like. And in 8.1, we did two things. We updated a set of APIs, and we also added a new set of APIs. What I'm trying to do this talk is I'm trying to focus a little bit more on some of the new added APIs that you see in the blue boxes. And so with that, I'm going to jump into one area. And the reason I'm going to jump into this area first is because this demo can take a little bit of time, because I'm actually going to do some Azure provisioning on the fly here. And if it needs to take a little time, I can go on to the rest of my talk while I'm doing it. So with that, let's go ahead and show you some new work that we've done with Visual Studio integrated with Azure in 8.1. So I have an existing project that I'm going to go ahead and pop up. So I pre-populated a little bit, and it's this project here. And if I run it, you'll see there's really not much to this project. It's basically slightly more than a blank project. And what I did is I put a splash screen in. Whoop. You don't see. Thank you. You don't see. Sorry. I'll figure out how to swap that. Where's my tech help? Because, hey, I see it. We'll get it figured out. Was it made a keynote? I had mic problems there too. Today must be my unlucky day. So is it me that needs to... Yeah, so maybe that's it. Nope. No, that's what it is. Got it. Okay, sorry. Technical glitch averted. Let's try that again. There we go. Now you can see this black. So what I want to show, though, is not that. It is the integration we've done in 8.1 with, and really one of the things that I want to demonstrate here is that there were certain aspects of integrating with Azure that were hard, but there were also aspects of doing things like live tiles that were a little bit challenging in 8, and we really tried to work across Azure, across tools, and across Windows to make this experience much better in 8.1. So again, I basically have a blank project here, and so what I'm going to do is say add push notification. And what I want to do is I want to support live tiles in my app. And it used to be that was a bit challenging, as I said. So what I do have to do is I have already created a developer account, and I'm going to sign in. Hopefully I get this right. And all I've done, though, is I haven't published an app. All I've done in the store is, with my developer account, is I've just reserved a name. And what this thing is going to do here is it's going to allow me to go ahead and pick this name that I've reserved. And now what's happening is Visual Studio is associating my current app with the name that I've reserved in the store. And what I can do now is I can do a couple things, but I'm going to create a new service because that's what I want to do. At this point in time, the one thing that I have done for setup is I've done this import subscriptions. And what import subscriptions does is it just teaches VS about my Azure account. So I've done ahead of time, I've just set it up an Azure Mobile Services account, and I have a store account. That's pretty much it. And I've told VS through this import subscriptions, which is really easy, I've taught VS about my Azure account, and I'll go ahead and hit create service. And in this case, I got to give it a unique name, tech ed demo. Hopefully that's unique. And it looks not good. Tech ed demo 2. Nobody would take that. Tech ed demo 3. And then let's try it in. I haven't done this before. I've been doing it in the US, so we'll try. We're going to live dangerously. North Europe, server name, tech ed demo again. And I have to enter a password. And it has to be strong. And I have to do it twice. Pressure, and go ahead and create. And this is what I wanted to do ahead of time because this might take a little bit of time. So what's happening here is that there's a handshake that needs to be set up between Azure Windows Notification Services, which is actually what sends the push notifications, and my app. And they all have to get married up at this point in time, and they're all getting married up. But in addition, my project is getting augmented such that it, not only can I edit my client-side code, but I could edit my server-side code that's currently being provisioned for Azure. And that's what's going on right here in the background. If it takes another second, I'll let it keep running and continue on with the presentation, which maybe I will do that. So I'll go ahead and jump back to the presentation. And we'll come back to that and check it in a few minutes. Now, there's a few things that I want to talk about in 8.1 that are, I will say, not developer APIs, but just a few things that you get for free when you upgrade your app. So I want to touch on those really quickly, which is we have this concept called resource packs. And if you recompile your app from 8 to 8.1, what resource packs do is they now separate out logically your localized resources from your non-localized resources so that when you actually have your app in the store and it's downloaded on the box, a customer downloads your app, that now they only get the resources that they need for their locale versus you have to have all resources bundled together. So this really helps a lot on app size and download time. And another one is if you retarget your app to 8.1 and you're using a XAML app, we now take all the markup in it and we turn it into binary format, and that really improves startup and load time. So these are not developer-exposed APIs, but just something that you should be aware of. It's just sort of some free goodness in the platform. Now, a couple other things I want to talk about to set some context is there are a couple things that have changed that you as a developer, if you've created an 8 app, should just be aware of. And one is that the guidance was, hey, you should integrate with Search Charm, and you can feel free to still integrate with the Search Charm. But you can think of now as the Search Charm, its primary function is searching Windows and the web, not necessarily apps. And what that means is that, hey, we have a new inbox or in-app search control. And if you want to do search in your app, guess what? We have a control for that, and go ahead and do search for your app. So this is a bit of a change where before the guidance was not to put search in your app, but we just found it was too good of an experience for way too many apps. So we do have a new search control, and this right here kind of outlines first you would think, a search control, how hard is that? Well, it turns out it's pretty hard, and this diagram will just kind of show you a couple things why that's hard, is that as part of search, you can opt into, and by default, the control will keep track of search history for that app. In addition, you can provide suggestions for the app as well, so the search control will show both of those. And there are suggestions based on your query as well, so this would be, in this case, San Francisco Chronicle. The first item up there would be something you've previously selected, and these would be things that they think might be matches. So that's all baked into the control. So as a developer, you don't have to build that yourself. But really, one of the key things that's really hard about search controls that do auto-suggest is when you have to worry about things like IMEs and IMEs working with the search suggestions. And so we've done all the work to plumb that in. I think in my deck here, I was going to walk you through the search control, but I've really got a lot of content. So if I have time in the end, when I do a store demo, I'll come back and show you the search control. But the previous diagram gives you a pretty good idea of how it works. And so let me just go check on my background task here. And hey, look at that. We got it. And so the last thing I'm going to do is go ahead and select the service I just created and hit finish. And this should be some really quick provisioning on this one. And this is just really setting up, doing the glue to set up my project. And now, okay, so a couple things happened. And one of them is that my app got modified a bit to support talking to Azure. But also, I got effectively, you could view it as sort of a reference added to my server-side Azure project. And that reference is right here. So I can deal with, in one editing experience, I can deal with both the server-side logic and the client-side logic. And by default, what this experience does is it's set up to, I'm on the server-side code now, which is insert.js. And on the server-side, they do some node.js stuff. But on the server-side, it's set up right now. By default, what happens is when my app wakes up, it goes and pings Azure. And Azure just, as a result of that, just sends a push notification, or it's set up by default to do that. That's not normally how you'd want to code up your app, but it's really set up so that as a developer, you can figure out what's going on really quickly. What's happening here is that when my app wakes up, it'll ping Azure. This function gets called, and if I run the app, which I'll do now, I'm sending a text toast notification. So all I've done is I did the add new push notification, and with nothing else, that's a push notification being sent from Azure. So now I have Windows notification services, my app, and Azure all set up just through those wizards. So much, much easier based on what it was in the previous version. So we think that's going to make it much more approachable for developers to do push notifications from their app. Now, if I wanted to do a tile update, like a live tile, it's pretty simple. It's on the Azure side. We've already got some, let's see, did I copy something over? Maybe I didn't. So on the Azure side, there's already some methods set up to allow you to send toast notifications or send tile notifications. So it's pretty easy, depending on what you want to do, to switch over and rather than send a toast, to send a tile notification. But again, we think it makes it much more approachable for developers to do to add Azure to basically power their push experiences in 8.1. So getting back to some of the changes in Windows that as a developer you should be aware of. And one thing that kind of Brad did a little bit of demoing on this morning is previously in Windows 8, there were really two views as a developer you had to worry about. And one view was when your app was in normal state, effectively, which was if it was anything bigger than 768 in the vertical direction and 1024 in the horizontal direction. And you also had to support this thing called a snap state. And we heard a lot of developer feedback that they felt in general that, hey, the snap state, and it was true, the snap state just wasn't valuable for their app. So in 8.1, you no longer have to provide the snapped view for your app. And the other thing is with the new windowing model, where now I can do 50-50 windows, most apps can be put in a state now where they're not just 768, they can be down to 500 pixels wide. So you as an app developer now, the additions are is you don't have to build a snap state, but you do have to design from 500 and above, and we just generally recommend you do adaptive layout from 500 and above. And then as a developer, if you find that, hey, you would like to do a smaller state, a 320 state, as a developer, you can opt in. And the one change there is if you opt in to 320 and above, you're actually not opting into just a 320 state like before. You're opting into supporting everything from 320 pixels wide all the way up to as big as your app can go. So it's a little bit of change than what we've done previously in 8, but we think it's a much better change for both developers and end users in 8.1. So with sort of the basics of changes out of the way, let me go ahead and talk about sort of a whirlwind of some of the other things that we've added in the platform. So one thing we got some feedback on was, hey, I want to be able from my app to do a PowerPoint kind of a thing, which is I want to be able to have my app control an external monitor, like PowerPoint presentation mode. And so we added a new support via projection manager type. And what projection manager type allows you to do is query if there's a secondary monitor attached. And then you as a developer can create secondary windows on that secondary monitor. So now you can create a modern store app that actually supports multiple windows. And we think this is really more important in enterprise type scenarios where you may have that sort of a setup. Something that Brad talked about this morning, but he didn't necessarily talk about the developer aspect of it, is that you can have screensaver apps, but you as a developer can create an app that is a screensaver app or controls what's actually displayed on the lock screen. And the other thing is Brad showed the Skype call. But you as a developer, if you're building a messaging app, you can also opt in to building an app that does that exact same thing. So those aren't limited to, if you will, Microsoft apps. There, any developer can take advantage of those features. We added some new contracts. We added calendar. So now, and we've done these in a secure way, but we've added both calendar and people. And effectively what this does is it allows an app, for example, your app, can now add, an invite. It can't necessarily see a calendar, but you can add an appointment. You can add an appointment to a calendar, and you as an app author, you control your own appointments. So effectively the model is you say, hey, I want to add an appointment. I want to add it at this time. As a developer, you say that. And what will happen is your app will then pop something up that actually shows the user's calendar at that time. You as an app author don't get access to their calendar, but it will pop up the calendar. The user, end user at that point in time can say, hey, yes, that looks like a good time. Accept that. And then your app gets to then place that entry into the calendar, and it controls that entry in the calendar. So again, it can't see it. It can just control its own entries that it makes into the calendar, all under user control. And people is just a mechanism by which that, in a similar way, your app can say, hey, is there a person, does this person have on their, in their basically people list, do they have somebody named Joe Stegman? And if so, the app can say, okay, can I bring up that person's contact card in the context of the app, and then the end user can interact with it, like instance or make a phone call or something else, send an instant message from their app. And I'd love to show demos of a lot of these features with the 5,000 APIs that I've tried to pick and choose some of the ones that I thought would be a little bit more interesting to demo. So with that being said, let me just jump into a demo of something else new that we've added in the platform, which is text-to-speech. So jumping back into Visual Studio, and I'm going to open an existing project. Yes, I will. I'm going to live dangerously. So what I've got here is pretty much the facade of an app, and if I go ahead and run it, this app allows you to type some text in and then hit a button that says speak and select a voice, but there's really not much to the app in order to do that. So what I want to do, though, is just show you how simple it is to go ahead and wire up that button to voice enable your app. And this is the button click event, the speak button click event, and in this case I am, just to try to keep it simple, I'm going to add that much code to actually play some sound. And what this is doing is there is a new speech class, and I'm going to scroll up a little bit just to show you there's not a lot of magic. There's a new speech synthesis class, and when my app started, it created an instance of that. That's what I'm doing here. Now, or what I'm doing here is I'm grabbing the text in that text block, and I'm calling on the speech class. I'm saying synthesize text, and what that does is it takes that text, goes off and turns that into audio and basically returns me a stream of that audio that I can then play with the media player. So pretty simple. Now what I've done here is I just have the ENUS languages installed on the system, but we support a wide variety of languages. So even though this demo is in English, that if you want to do Spanish or another language, we have languages for or voices for those languages as well. So here you can see I have a media player. All this is doing is turning the speech into text and then playing it in my media player. So let's go ahead and turn on my sound so you can hear it. And let's run that. Speak.
Hello. How are you?
So you go, hey, great, cool. You don't necessarily like the voice. There are some better voices and a slightly more European voice.
Hello. How are you?
So now even then you may say, hey, I want to go faster, I want to go slower, I want to pause here, I have some interesting words that I don't think that engine's going to be able to understand. No need to worry. The engine supports something called SSML, which is speech synthesis, something like that, markup language. And just although I'm sending just text to the engine now, I'm going to change this over. And the only difference I made in the code is that I now check if there's markup in it, and I'm going to go ahead and drop some markup in it in a minute. If there's some markup in it, rather than call what I called before, which was synthesize text to speech, I'm going to synthesize SSML to stream. And for markup, I'm going to go ahead and grab this pre-canned markup here. This is SSML. But this will give you a better idea of how powerful the speech engine is. So let's go ahead and copy that in here. And so you can see it looks mostly like normal text with some markup in there. And one of the things here is I'm adding a couple what's called markers. So suppose you're doing a book and you have chapters in here. You can actually search in your stream to go find one of the markers, and you can start playing at a given marker, like a chapter mark or paragraph mark. You can do phonetic pronunciations, which is what you see here.
This sentence has marks here and another mark here. This is an example of how to speak the word. Whatchamacallit? This is an example of how to use the say as tag to say a date. April 30th, 2013. This fourth example is how to use the ordinal data type.
So given it's an EN-US market, you're seeing the day and month are reversed from what most people in here may see as a date and month. That's this down here. But you can see there that you can control phonetically. You can control the pace at which you speak things out. And you can control things like saying a date out logically rather than 0430. So it's really a super powerful engine. And in fact, we have our assistive technology that we ship in Windows, Narrator. Basically, Narrator uses this technology for it to do its text-to-speech stuff. So we think this will enable a bunch of really cool scenarios in Windows 8.1 apps. And so moving back on to the presentation. So we've also added a new web client. And the reason I have this chart in here is because the first thing some people say is, what, another HTTP client? And yes, it's another HTTP client. However, there were lots of limitations that we had. We actually had three different HTTP clients across. C++ had to use one, C# had to use another, JavaScript used yet another, and they all had some set of limitations in them. And so instead what we did is we said, okay, rather than trying to solve it three times, let's just solve it in one new stack and make sure we solve all the problems and make it available across all languages, including C++. So you can see that's what this chart is trying to convey, is that not only do you have a new web stack, but you have a new web stack that solves a lot of the main pain points that we have heard from customers in the platform. And one of the ones, the first one that I really want to call out is because it's something that we've heard a lot of feedback from the C# developers, is the fact that we didn't have the concept of being able to share cookies. So if you are a developer and you're using a web view in your app, and then you turn around and did a HTTP request, you didn't share the cookies between those two. So that's all fixed now with this stack. So there are big pain points like that that we work to solve with the new stack. In terms of programming model, you'll find the programming model is really similar. If you're a .NET developer, it's really similar to the one that you're using now. The same with JS, it's slightly different. And in C++, it's much better than what you're using now. So we're really happy. Performance is another thing that we're really happy with the experience that we get with the new web stack. But effectively, if you're using the old HTTP client, you'll be able to quickly move to this one, and you'll get these additional benefits in the platform. So we've got some other new APIs that we added. One of them, and I think the only one there's two of them that I want to talk about on here. One is that we now added a way to make it easier to work with background downloading such that you can prefetch content. So, for example, suppose you're building a magazine-type app, and you want to have, or a newspaper type app, and you know the first thing your users typically do based on their usage pattern is they bring it up in the morning to read the day's paper. And so what you'd like to do is rather when they bring it up in the morning, rather than having to then download all that content, you'd really like to have that content fresh and available for them when they first start their app in the morning. And so what the prefetching work that we did is it makes it really easy for developers to sort of transparently, if you will, create a background task that does that. Effectively, they add they call a couple APIs that say, hey, can you please preload these URLs? And then that'll automatically kick off some stuff or set some stuff up with a system background task that will automatically make sure that it downloads that content. And when I say downloads the content, in this case, it's just downloading it into the web cache. So this is geared towards web content. And one other thing that just it's one of those things that developers need to be aware of is that in 8.1, we plumbed in SkyDrive more fundamentally into the file system. And since SkyDrive is now plumbed in more fundamentally, it's great. One of the things that now developers have to think about is, hey, my content actually may not be there. So what SkyDrive does is that you may know, or you may have a bunch of files in the cloud, and what it does is it'll keep the reference information about that on the local client, but it may not download the file. And so what that creates is that if you're dealing with files, then you have to think about whether or not that file is actually really available, or is it something that is not available yet because it's still being cached in the cloud. And so there's a set of APIs, additional APIs in the file system where you can check to see if a file is really, if it's just being cached or if it really is available locally, and if not, you can force a download or determine that you're not connected and therefore you're not able to process that file. But again, it's one of those things as a developer you just need to be aware of it, because it will be something where sometime you're probably, if you're working with files, that it will be something where at some point in time you're working with a file that's actually backed by SkyDrive and not available. We've done a set of work around really gaming, media, and then platform UI. And from a gaming perspective, some of the, I'll say that probably the most interesting thing that we did here, and I'm guessing that given it's Tech Ed Europe audience, so there's probably not a lot of game developers in the audience, but I'm curious, anybody out there develop a game? No, what? Is it none? Zero? Okay. So still everybody will love what I'm going to say here. We've added a new feature called Tiled Resources, and that's really something that's now baked in at a more fundamental level, I say, on the silicon. But really, it's just about being able to have bigger, better models on your lower-powered video card. And then we've done a bunch of work with gaming. You use things called shaders. We've done a bunch of work about being able to runtime compile and link them. But the most exciting thing, even to folks in this audience, is we've done a bunch of partnerships with what we call middleware providers. And when I say middleware here, I mean people who build gaming platforms or gaming engines. And like right now, if you said, hey, I'd love to build a game on Windows 8.1, you might bring up Visual Studio and you go, okay, where do I start? And you may think, hey, you know, I'd like to do something like Angry Birds. And then you realize, well, I need to generate sprites and I need to have physics because things fall. How do I do that? And the Windows itself doesn't have what's called physics libraries or really approachable 2D libraries, but there are a lot of middleware providers, if you will, that already do that. So if you were to build a game like Angry Birds, it's the fact that we have these partnerships with the middleware providers that makes that really easy now for Windows developers to do. And then one other thing we did was if people text and they like to send not just smiley faces, but the color smiley faces, we did work to fundamentally bake color fonts, if you will, into the platform, and it doesn't sound like a big deal, but the engineering effort to get that done and perform it was a lot of engineering effort. So now that when you text your wife or significant other with a colorful smiley face, you'll actually see it as a colorful smiley face. We did work to bake PDF rendering directly into the platform, and what we did for PDF is, I say PDF rendering, and so you can think of at a high level what our APIs do are they allow you to open up a PDF document, you can figure out how many pages there might be in that PDF document, and I think that's what this tells you, is that you can figure out how many pages there are in that PDF document, and then you can really render those pages, I'll say, as an image or as a DX surface, if you will, if you want to do something more low level. So the nice thing about the approachable part of these, the non-DX part of these, is effectively it allows you to treat a PDF page as an image. And our APIs allow you to control the quality of that image, if you will. So you can say, hey, grab me the first page in this PDF document and turn it into an image, and I want the image to be of this quality. And so it allows you to take, if you're dealing with assets that happen to be PDF assets, previously you had either go to a third party or do something server-side. Now you can render that content and seamlessly, because it's done, as I said, via image tag, seamlessly, just like you could with an image in your app. And that's whether it's a XAML app or a WinJS app or a C++ app. We do also support, rather than image tag, you can actually render it directly onto a DX surface if you're one of the more lower level folks. But super happy to have this in the platform because it does enable a lot of richer content type scenarios. Even just thinking of a mail app and getting a PDF attachment, I can now view that without having to go get the PDF app in the store to be able to view that. And this is in the windows.data.pdf namespace. Excuse me. So for media, and for folks keeping track, I'm doing a build recap, but all the build sessions, and there's about 90 developer sessions that I'm doing a recap of, those 90 sessions are all online. So I'll do a quick overview of PDF. There is a PDF session. Think of every slide, there's a session at build. The content is online that you go off and review. So if you wanted more information on the PDF APIs, you could read our docs, or you could watch the PDF session online, the build PDF session. For media, one of the main things we did was really continue to work on improving performance and enhancing or increasing battery life when you're playing back media content. We do. I showed a little bit of the adaptive content, but we do adaptive content both, again, across our UI platforms and encrypted content, which, again, was the keynote demo. We had an 8. You can only do downloads of a certain size, so we have unconstrained downloads. And then we now do a better integration with Xbox One, where if you try to play 2 on Xbox One, that you can actually launch an app on Xbox One and have that app actually basically launched. For example, if you wanted to do a music app, you could launch an Xbox app that was a music app on Xbox One, and that would play your music. So just better overall integration. And again, we've done work across audio. We've done a lot of work in the media space. This is kind of the high level, and if really media is your thing, then I'd suggest watching the build talk online, and they go over an exhausted list of the enhancements that we've done in this space. So now I'm going to spend a bit of time on the UI platform, and we've made a lot of investments, and this happens to be one of the areas that I personally own in the platform. And one of the themes really for 8.1 was we really wanted speed was first and foremost. We had cases where people couldn't build as performant apps as they'd like. And so we really focused on what do we need to do in the platform to really make it so that these panning experience, startup experiences are really great and performant. And I'll show actually some demos and talk a little bit more about what we've done there. We looked at common UX patterns that we were seeing people build in their apps, and we said, which ones don't we have that seem to be the most popular? And so we added those to the platform, and I'll talk about Hub as one of those patterns that we added. We also looked and we noticed that people were not necessarily wanted to build standard looking UI. They always wanted to customize, whether it was branding or just to be different, which we think is great. But when people started to do that, sometimes it wasn't as easy as the developer would like it to be in the platform. So we added some greater flexibility to the platform in the UI controls. And we basically wanted to also work on just making it easier and more approachable to use the UI platform. So with that, I am going to, I'm going to play a video. I just want to make sure don't think my sound is on. You don't need sound. I don't need sound for this one. Well, sorry. Let's see if I can start it here. Now, what this is showing is just generally what we've done is, I know it's not the most ideal video. And so I'll play it again. But the reason why you're going, why am I seeing a video like this? And because this is comparing Windows 8 to 8.1, and it was really difficult for me to get two machines up here on two different monitors and have the finger hit at the same time on both of them. And so instead, back in Redmond, we've pre-canned this up. So what you're seeing is on the left is, this is what I'll call as a big list, and on the right is the same big list. And this is playing back, and here you'll see the fingers. I know it's not the greatest video, but the fingers will hit them both at the same time, but this will show you the startup. On the left is 8.1, the one that just popped up, and on the right is Windows 8. And the reason I show this is just because we spent a lot of time doing exactly this kind of test, figure out what was slow in the platform and what could we do to really improve the overall performance of the platform. So here's another case of, in this case, panning. And in the left is, or on the right is, in this case, is Windows 8.1. And you would be surprised how much time we just sat doing this again and again and again. What is the bottleneck? How can we make it faster? What is the bottleneck? How can we make it faster? And so we've done a bunch of improvements in our overall perf to just make it so it's, see how fast that app is panning? Just to make it really buttery smooth in terms of the performance that you can get out of the box in a Windows 8 app. I talked a little bit about some new patterns that we added to the platform, and the main one is, one of the main ones is a hub pattern. And hub is really a pattern. I think I got another slide that kind of outlines it. I'm going to do a store demo in the end, and the store uses the hub pattern. But one of the things that we saw people doing a lot of is they kind of create, they have a header and they have a section, and they have a header and they have different content in a different section. And it wasn't all the same data in the sections, and we'd kind of optimize Windows 8 for every time you see section up here for being the same type of data in the section. And so what a hub really is it's saying, hey, I have a bunch of sections, and there's heterogeneous content in my sections. And you can think of the developer model as actually pretty simple. I create a hub, I add a header hub section in it, and then add my content in that. So we saw this a lot in eight apps, and what we wanted to make sure is that we had a really super easy, performant, accessible way for developers to do this same kind of concept. And this exists in both exists in both WinJS and XAML. Now, I'm going to break now and talk about sort of the technologies. I've been talking in general about things that apply to both WinJS and XAML. But I want to talk about a little about WinJS, and then I'm going to talk about XAML from a UI perspective. And the reason why is that some of the stuff that we've done here are sort of unique to that developer platform or environment. For example, the first thing I want to talk about is a scheduler. And we added a scheduler in WinJS, and for what people who don't know is that, like all UI platforms, there's UI threading issues, and they tend to be even worse in the web platform because you don't have an easy way to be able to do things like background threads. So instead, there's a lot of contention for the UI thread, and a lot of people end up building their own what's called a scheduler. And in this case, we've provided a default scheduler in the platform. All our UI controls and everything in WinJS leverages the scheduler, and it makes it really easy for you as a developer to plug in your own functionality to leverage that scheduler, and then things are easily balanced between what the UI and the platform is trying to do with what you want to do and the experience you want to provide for your developers. And for people who are familiar with .NET and the dispose model in .NET, we have a similar thing and concept that has been added to WinJS, which is you can now tag your elements as disposable, and then like when you get rid of a page, your elements are automatically cleaned up. And we did this because we were seeing a lot of people who had issues with memory and managing memory in their WinJS apps. For people who are familiar with like ASP.NET and the old repeater concepts, we've now added a repeater concept, and it's give me a list of data, and I'll repeat and I'll cycle through that list of data, the platform will for you. You give it a template of code, and it'll just generate that template of code for each item in the list. And again, it's really analogous if you played with ASP.NET or other repeater controls. That's effectively what it is. Now, item container is interesting because what effectively this is it contains the swipe gesture and some of the other Windows UX in a self-contained control. So what we found is that developers said, hey, you know what, I've already got my existing HTML UI, and really all I really want is I want to put your selection model on top of my div. How do I do that? And what this does is this effectively about doing that, allowing them to do that sort of a thing. And then I talked about there's a new search box control that we added to the platform, and a navigation bar control, which is similar to the app bar. It does navigation a little bit more. When I do the store demo at the end, I'm going to show you a demo of the nav bar. And one thing I want to call out is that we improved some things in WinJS as well. The previous set was all new. This is things that existed before, but we just did a set of improvements. On the next slide, I'm going to go into the improvements we did for list view, but for app bar, we did a set of work about making it so that it works better with keyboard navigation. We did a better job of now handling when you resize your UI, the correct items drop out, and text drops out in the correct way. For the list view, we added vertical grid support, and there's a little animation that shows you that, which we didn't have before. We added grouped header support, another common request we had for list view. And we made it, we added a cell spanning grid. A lot of people had tried to do this sort of thing, and it was a little bit harder than we would like for developers. And so we made it much easier and much more baked into the platform. We've done other list view work, and again, there's a build talk that goes into all the details here, but high level, these were some of the main investment areas that we did in 8.1. And we added a set of new layouts to just because, and the reason we did this, and you see that this was a little bit of a pattern that we did in 8.1, is that sometimes you go, hey, why did you create a new one? And one of the reasons why is that in certain cases, we didn't find that we could maintain compatibility at the same time providing either a great increase in performance or a new huge set of features. So we maintain the old set, and at the same time, we may introduce a new one when we felt that we had to in order to provide the new functionality without impacting backwards compatibility. So I want to talk about some of the new stuff that we've done in XAML, and some of you would say, hey, this stuff, that the next set of things I'm going to talk about shouldn't be new, but they are. We added things that didn't exist, date picker, time picker, all the flyouts, and for people who built XAML apps, they know that this was not part of the platform, and you had to go to something like a third-party library like Callisto to generate this sort of thing. No more. It's all baked into the platform, fully accessible, super performant, works great. We added app bar buttons, which didn't exist before. So we did a lot of, fit and finish in the control platform, and we added a command bar. One of the things that command bar does is you can think of it in some ways, this was to help make it a little easier to share some code between Windows Phone and Windows 8 or 8.1 in this case. Another common complaint we heard from people was, hey, why don't you have a hyperlink? And we're like, yeah, we should have a hyperlink. So we added a hyperlink. And for the folks who are into drawing graphics, we have this new thing called a swap chain panel. Previously, we had a swap chain background panel, which basically said, hey, the background of my app could be effectively a DX surface, and I can draw into it. Now we said, hey, you can put DX wherever you want in your app. And it's similar to when I was talking this morning about web content, that I can now put web content anywhere I want in my app, and it's seamless. I can now put DX content anywhere I want in my XAML app, and it's a seamless experience. We added media transport controls in XAML, which didn't exist before. We did a bunch of improvements to swap chain background panel, including the ability to do things like write on a background thread to the background panel. And for people who don't know, swap chain background panel is also another, it's basically a DX surface, or it allows you to draw on a DX surface and treat it as an image. We greatly improved some of the work we'd have around our navigation stack. And web view enhancements, we did some that I showed this morning in a keynote. And the main thing we fixed there is, and if people have played with the web view in 8.0, and it's really great about allowing you to get web content in there, but there's this thing that people like to call the airspace issue. And it drove It was painful for a lot of customers, especially people who were putting ads in there. They couldn't create a seamless experience, and they had to swap back and forth between a web view and a web view brush. All that goes away. It's a really great, polished experience. We'd love to have had it that way in 8, but it was a significant investment to be able to get the web view to compose seamlessly, but I assure you now that it does compose seamlessly within your app experience. At the same time, we added a set of other features on top of the web view. In fact, there is a whole talk and build just on the new web view features that we've added in 8.1. And there's a new talk on all the XAML features as well that Tim Heuer did down at, or is doing. I think he did it this morning in build. Text is another area where it was just a matter of just continuing to add some features that we just didn't have, including text alignment and baseline and placeholder. We added header, and a lot of this stuff was actually, again, to bring us more in line with what exists on the Windows Phone today. We couldn't set highlight color, which we added that. We did some stuff with reading order. We don't have a full talk on text. This is actually pretty much the list of features that we added to text. And we didn't have an ability to get a paste event on text box, so you could control what's actually pasted in there. We now have that. So if you want to paste, if someone's copied some HTML and they're pasting it into your text box, you as a developer can go, oh, it's HTML. I don't support that. Let me go turn that into the correct format. We did some work on bindings, and we added access to binding expression. And these are some features that you may have been used to if you're using Silverlight or WPF in the past. But we did a bunch of features here. And again, you'll notice those features are as a common theme. If you're a phone developer, you'll notice that those are consistent with features that exist today on Windows Phone, because that was an important thing for us, was to continue to try to make sure the platforms were evolving in such a way that they felt like the same platform. And then we did some work to basically better support behaviors in Blend for people who are used to using behaviors in whether it's Silverlight or WPF. And with that huge amount of talking, let me go ahead and finally get to writing some more code. And I want to talk about another new feature that we added. Another headache with a lot of folks was that we just didn't have an ability to do what people are used to previously from either Silverlight or WPF, which is, hey, I have some XAML content, if you will. I just want to write that into a bitmap. How can I do that? And it didn't exist in Windows 8, but it does exist in Windows 8.1. And so I want to, and it's really simple and kind of cool to use. And so let me go ahead and open a little project and that I've got. Let's see, resource generator. Here we go. Go ahead and run that and kind of show you what it does. So one thing that if you have built an app before that you realize is that you have to create a lot of assets for that. You have to create a splash screen, and you have to create a big tile and a small tile, and you have to create them for a bunch of different DPIs. And so what this app does is it says, hey, I'm going to make that easy for you, and I'm just going to generate all of those for you. And but before in Windows 8.1, this was sort of the dreaded problem, which was how do I actually do that? How do I take and compose some UI? And in this case, what I'm doing is I've got just a plain, if you will, a canvas with a background color, and I can select a glyph in this case, and I can put the glyph and center it on all the icons. But now what I want to do is, hey, I'd love to take that thing, that splash screen, that image there, and actually turn it into an image. How do I do that? How do I compose that text with that background and print it out or turn it into an image? And that's really what we worked on here, is we enabled that exact scenario. And in this case, if you care, you know, I can, well, since we've got a heart in there, let's see, can I make it pink? I would love to say I would, but what? There we go. I need more red, I guess. But effectively what this app does is it allows you to sort of add an icon to the image and then print it out. Right now, it's more like a Windows 8 app. It lets you show you the concept, but there's no way I can actually generate that bitmap. So let me show you how you would do that now in 8.1. And it's pretty straightforward. So what I've got in my app here, this is the XAML for the app. and I have there's a bunch of areas like this that look like a grid with a text block, and the text block just has the font, that little glyph. And so now I want to go ahead and generate. So let me add a button and go ahead and say make the button generate and click equals, we'll add a new event handler, and we'll navigate to the event handler, and there's the button click event I just created. Now, how would I go about and do this? Well, the first thing I want to do is, let's say private, I'm going to write some real code here. So bear with, private void generate image. How about that? Image. And let's see, let's make it take a UI element. Real code writing here, tree, and maybe a file name, string, file name. So after listening to me talk, listening to me type has got to be a better experience than that. So, and then let's go ahead and let's just try calling this once and say generate image. Nope, I can't even spell. This is why I generally don't do the G-N-E-E-R-A-T image. I'll get it. I misspelled the G-E-R. Look at that. Again, so I'm not a good typist. G-E-N-E-R-A, generate image. Yay. And then for the tree, we'll just start with the splash screen. I want to print that tree, which is my splash screen, which is set to 620 by 300, the size of a splash screen with that UI element. We're just going to start small. And so it was called splash. And then let's give it a file name, splash screen, and that's it. Now let's go ahead and write some code. So how do I do that? Well, let's see, render target bitmap is the name of the function, RTB equals new. Yeah, I'm going to write this whole thing right now just to show you how easy it is. So I create a new render target bitmap. So now I want to take that tree that I just passed in, which is that splash screen, and RTB.org. Let's see, what would it be? Probably, I want to render something, so is there a render? Yes, render async. And let me guess, it takes a, and I assure you, it takes a tree, a UI element. Now you see I'm getting squigglies, and it's because that's a async method, so we'll do await, and we probably need an async, and a task up here as well. And there we go, and it's saying, hey, cool. And I need a wait here for people who are C-sharp developers, and then I need async here. I can hear somebody in the audience like going, hey, I can code this up for you. I know, I got this. Okay, so what did I just do? I created a render target bitmap. I said, hey, take that visual tree and go ahead and render it async. And what this does behind the scenes, it creates a bitmap with that context. So now I actually need to read that bitmap out. And I will do a iBuffer pixel array equals, and then await, and then we'll do the same thing, RTB dot, and then get pixels. Yeah, get pixels async. There you go. And that's it. So with that set of code there, I've now taken it and turned it into a pixel array. And the only thing I have left to do is turn it into an image. But for that, rather than writing all of that code for you, I'm going to go ahead and plop it in here. And all this is doing is, I can't just write to the file system due to security reasons, so I need the end user to go ahead and pick a file or a file location for me to write it. So this is just writing some code that actually does that. It picks a file location, and we're going to assume PNG file format because that's what I want. So let's pick a file. And once I pick the file, now I'm going to write those bits into the file. And again, rather than you watching me write that code, and I see I call it pixels down here, I'll explain what this does. But effectively, this just creates an encoder. And it says, take that file stream, which is the file the end user picked, take that thing, pass it to create a PNG encoder, and then take that pixel stream and encode it in PNG, and using the height and width of that block, which is the writable bitmap.render, but it's basically my UI element, and then go ahead and basically write that. And that's all it takes. And so with that, if I didn't make any mistakes, which it's possible I could have, I've got my generate button, and I'll go ahead and hit generate. And I'm going to save, sure, this is my desktop. Save. And voila, I'll go back to my desktop. And get back to my desktop. There it is. And you see there, 620 by whatever, 200. So you can see really easy, approachable API that allows me to create these assets for my apps. And we really did a lot of listening to customer feedback, and this was one of the big pain points that we had heard from customers, is that this was an enabler. Without a writable bitmap.net render, there just was no way they could do certain set of scenarios. And so we really wanted to focus in 8.1 on doing those sorts of things, enabling things in the platform that if we didn't enable them, there was no way for a developer to do them. So moving on to, nope, not what I want. You can see that, but okay. Click. There we go. So I showed this a little bit this morning in the keynote. We did the work for seamless integration with the WebView. We added basically control over navigation. I mentioned that we had done a couple other things, and there's a full talk on it. We did the ability to be able to control whether or not you want to allow the app to actually navigate or redirect the navigation. There's some stuff that allows you to basically control the lifecycle of the page that you're on. Another big feature based on feedback was, hey, I have web content in my app. Can I just browse to that web content? Yes, now you can browse to the local web content that actually exists in your app and stored in your app. And we did additional things to lock down some of the security on the web view. And with that, I showed a demo this morning in the keynote. So, and given I'm at 1820 already, but the demo was effectively just showing the airspace issues that we'd fixed in the web view in 8.1. So connecting to devices, mentioned some of these this morning in the keynote. We added a bunch of device support directly in the platform, so you as a developer can get to a wider range of devices, and these are the ones that I mentioned this morning. I didn't mention geofencing, but we do have geofencing APIs, and for people who don't know what that is that now I could say, hey, I'm at work, and when I leave, I want to make sure I text my wife and let her know what time I'm leaving so she knows what time to expect me home. And with geofencing, effectively, that's the kind of thing that you can now write, which is, hey, when I leave this fence, make some event happen and write some code when that event happens. So super powerful, and we think there's lots of advantages to having that in the platform. Fingerprint, you saw this morning. We have document scanners. One really cool thing that they didn't demo this morning in the keynote, and it does require some new device hardware, is there's this low-lag photo capture that we now have support in the platform. And with updated hardware and camera hardware, what this allows you to do is, as you're sitting there taking a picture, you may end up saying, hey, you got your kid or whatever, and you want them to do something, and you take a picture, but you're just a little late or just a little bit before the picture time. What the low-lag photo capture does is it's really continuously capturing, almost like a movie, but it's continuously capturing photos. So what happens is, let's say you're a little late, the low-lag photo capture allows you to actually go back and say, hey, I don't want that photo at whatever this time is. I want the photo from 20 milliseconds before then. And you can go ahead and grab the photo that was 20 or 16 milliseconds before that. So really, and as a developer, you can do this. There's apps, the app built into Windows allows you to do this, but you as a developer can get that exact same experience where you can check to see if they have a low-lag photo device or photo camera device on there, and if so, you can have it go into the low-lag photo capture experience, and you can now allow the end user to browse through the sequence of photos that they took. And then tools improvements. And so with tools, we've done a bunch of work around performance and diagnostic tools. And I'm going to try to squeeze in a demo of this because this is some of the coolest stuff that we've done on the tool side. Did improvements to async debugging, which I'll give you a demo of. Continually working on improving the designers. And again, we've done much more. There's a build session or several build sessions that just talk about the improvements we've done. I know it says devices there, but this is tools. A set of improvements we've done in the tool space. And with that, I think I've got a quick little demo on async debugging. So let me go ahead and open a project I've got that demonstrates some of the issues with async debugging. And one of the things that happened in Windows 8 was we made it really easy to do procedural coding or treat async calls in a way that it makes it look like it's procedural. And what I mean by that is that here, what I'm doing is making a web request, and what the web request does is it goes out, does a HTTP GET from a URL, and that is happening async, meaning it's happening on a different thread. But as a developer, I don't have to worry about going off and saying, hey, spin up a thread, do this. When it's all done doing that, post back to the UI thread. And I can use the new await keyword in C# or the new previous version 4.0 to be able to make it look like it's procedural code. The problem was is the debugger didn't understand that. And so what happened is that as you were debugging through your code, you would have an experience where you do, yeah, great, okay. You'd hit the async code, and let's view the call stack here. And you'd go ahead and, if people can't see, magnifier's your friend. So you see a good, I called create temp file, then just to illustrate this, call bar, which calls foo, which calls button click, or vice versa, button click calls foo bar, create temp file, which is where I am now. In Windows 8, in Visual Studio, I'd hit F10. And what would happen is you'd see something like that, but your call stack wouldn't be preserved. Now what happens is you get your full call stack preserved in your async call. So super valuable and super productive for all the developers who've been struggling with async code and trying to figure out what their call stacks are while debugging that. So with that, let me move back on to the async debugging. So next thing is just quickly want to show you a tour of the performance tools we've got that we've added in Visual Studio. And let me open up. A project that I've got that demonstrates that, and I do trust it. So I'm going to go ahead and run this app. And there's a couple things that I want you to see, and this is just bouncing around a bunch of balls. Now, this is really, it turns out, you go, hey, did you guys go to sleep on me? Did you guys see the last one? Yeah? You're not seeing this one, though. I got it fixed. Let's go back, kill that. And go back to Visual Studio. And shift F5. We'll do that again. F5. There you go. So now it turns out, you go, okay, just a couple things bouncing around on the screen. Well, it turns out this is actually a good simulator for also doing a lot of panning of data, because what's happening when you're panning a lot of data is you're moving a bunch of things around on the screen very fast. So we tend to actually use these kinds of things because it gives us an easy way to view the experience. And right now there's about 100 particles that are floating around, and I'm going to hit 1,000 particles, and I want you to notice a couple things. When I first hit 1,000 particles, and this app happens to be a XAML app, but you'll get the same kind of tooling experience with HTML. When I hit 1,000, two things will happen. First, you'll see a slow pause. And then There's a frame rate up here that's saying I'm drawing at 60 frames per second. You'll see that drop. So you saw the pause, and now we see my frame rate drop. And so let's go ahead and do that one more time. So everything looks okay, 60 frames per second, 1,000 particles, pause, and now everything drops. So as a developer, it's kind of similar. I'm panning, and all of a sudden I pan fast, and then my experience drops. And I'm like, as a developer, I go, why? What's going on? And a lot of times those problems are specific to your app, but at least you want to know, give me a clue. Where is that performance problem? So in Visual Studio, we now have some new tools. And we have CPU sampling, which is the CPU profiling that we've had in the past. We now have two new ones, energy consumption. And energy consumption actually tells me basically how much power that would be estimated that my app would actually take. How much battery life is it draining? And how long would a typical battery last when running my app? And the one that I'm going to show you right now is that I'm going to start off with, which is XAML UI responsiveness. I know that there's something that seemed funky in my app, and I don't know why, but there's a couple things that were funky, so let's figure out what the heck those are. So I'm going to go ahead, yes, I'm going to run it. There's my app running. It's when I hit 1,000 particles. Pause. Bang, my frame rate drops. Okay, so what's going on there? So I'll hit stop collection. I went back to Visual Studio, and let's take a look at what is going on there. Whoa, get a graph, and guess what? I think you guys can see without me using magnifier. I don't really, at first glance, just in the dashboard kind of view, I go, okay, it looks like things seem to be okay here. Something different happened here. And then something that looks like it's all capped out happened here. But what is actually going on? And what this is telling you is that layout, there's something that caused a bunch of layout is orange. So this right here is probably, I can guess, that's probably when I saw that first pause. And this is telling me at least there's a bunch of layout happening. But I'm not sure what would be causing that layout. And then here, this says CPU 100% over here. This says, oh, my UI thread is at full utilization doing per frame callback stuff. So at least now, I at least start to have some inklings of what's going on. And what I see down in the next one is that this is telling my frames per second how effectively how smooth my app and buttery it is. It says fine, 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 whoa, drop off the cliff, and then slower. So again, I kind of see, okay, that's a pattern I am seeing, but what's causing it? And the one thing I want to show you here is that for this part here, it looks like some layout is happening, but what is causing it? And I know, and what I did is I clicked on this thing called hot elements. And what this says is that, hey, this is the part of your app that's really taking a lot of time to lay out. Now, in this app, it's no surprise, and yes, it's a simpler app, it's no surprise that you're going to find out that those are the 1,000 particles that I'm bouncing around. But in your app, you'd be surprised. Each app is sort of unique, but sometimes you find out, oh, it's my data template for blah that seems to be taking all the time during layout. So really quickly, by bringing this out, you can figure out, oh, this is the thing. This is the thing I need to speed up. And now you can go into your app and figure out, okay, let's speed that up. So that helps you identify the UI issues. But here you can also see, hey, I'm using a lot of CPU. What exactly is going on there? And what I'm going to do is, let's go ahead and rerun this. Whoops, I don't want to save that. Rerun this app. And I'm going to rerun it, but this time I'm going to go ahead and bring up the CPU sampling. Do the same thing again. Everything looks good. Add 1,000 particles. Slow. Frame rate drops. Go back to Visual Studio and go look at the visual CPU profiling in this case. And I'm going to pop up. And the main thing that I want to look at, which is the most interesting part, is here is telling me where my time is spent. And right here I can see 50% of my time is spent pretty much here and here. And if I go look at that, it'll tell me, oh, it's actually when I'm manually animating these things and the X and Y values, and I'm actually using change notification to do it. So while it doesn't tell me here's how to fix the app, it's really tough to ever tell someone here's exactly what you need to do. But now as a developer, I was quickly able to go, hey, I got some layout problems. I know where I got to go to fix those layout problems and make them faster. Hey, I got some problems where I'm bottlenecking the CPU. I now can see really easily that's where I need to go address my CPU bottleneck issues. So again, we think it's super powerful. It's going to really help with developer productivity in 8.1. So jumping back to the presentation. And let's see, do I really have 5 minutes to go? Is that the case? Yes? Assuming so, that's what it says. So I got one last little section here, which is some stuff on the store. And for the store, we did a set of work, and primarily one of the main things we did is redesign the store. And you can see here, screenshot, but it shows you, actually, you can also kind of see the use of the hub pattern in here. And one thing I do want to comment on that was another big thing in 8.1 that's not going to show up in the developer APIs is that all new system UI built in Windows is built with the same UI framework that you use as developers. That includes, in this case, the store is built with WinJS, the new search experience in Windows, all built with native XAML UI. So effectively what we wanted to do is we didn't want to have this model moving forward where developers use one set of APIs and Windows uses a different set of APIs. Instead, we said if it's got to be good enough for the core Windows shell experience, or if it's going to be good enough for developers, we want it to be good enough for the Windows core developer experience. So the new experiences that you see in Windows, again, were all built using the same UI that you use. And that means that when they run into performance problems, we've optimized them before it ever gets to developers. And so the store was redesigned to make it much more approachable, jumping back to the store for developers. But we did, since I got 3 minutes left now, I just want to talk about some of the things that we did based on feedback. There was a lot of policy where sometimes someone would submit an app. It wasn't clear why the app didn't wasn't accepted. So some of that was just due to there wasn't the right information on the policy. So we've tried to fix that. We support now M-rated games, some mature games for those people in the audience who don't know. We have better crash data now from certification. So if you failed certification due to crashes, you now got a better chance of figuring out why. Much better, much improved feedback on your failures and why it failed specifically. We have blog posts and better collateral on, again, on failures, because we found this was a common area where developers were really getting hung up on why their apps were not being certified. But for developers themselves, and you go, okay, it's great, it's easier for me to now get on the store. Is there anything new the store offers that I might want to be able to take advantage of? And for commerce now, where this isn't necessarily a developer feature, but we now have gift cards available on the store, so you can, you know, give a gift to somebody that's a $25 gift card for the Microsoft Store, and that's available in 41 countries. I think John mentioned that this morning. Now when you install an app, your app landing page stays up, so you can use that to promote other apps. In China, the biggest commerce thing is Alipay, and that's now supported as well. We added 70 new developer markets, which is all good for developers. But the developer thing, which is what I wanted to get to, was one nice thing about Blue Apps is that now with Blue Apps as a developer, when you publish an update, it's an update to a Blue App, it just automatically updates. You don't have to have the developer wait for the end user to go accept your update. For people who, usually this is hitting games a lot, but games now support, or the store now supports package sizes up to 8 gigs, and yes, for games that's not uncommon. Every 8 app, if you create an existing 8 app, it just installs and runs on the 8.1 store, so you can create an 8.1 app as well, but if you've got an 8 app, you're actually already part of the, you're already in the 8.1 store. If you create, just say, an 8.1 app, of course, it doesn't work on Windows 8, but if you do create an 8.1 app, people in the Windows 8 store will see your 8.1 app, and they'll say, hey, oh, I see this app as an 8.1 app, and the store will tell you, oh, upgrade to 8, and you can upgrade to Windows 8, or upgrade to Windows 8.1. You can do that directly from the store, but the store will tell you, hey, you need 8.1, click here to install 8.1, which it will do, and then it will install your app. If you've published both an 8 and an 8.1, 8.1 version of your app and someone has your app and upgraded from Windows 8 to 8.1, when they upgrade to Windows 8.1, they'll also get the 8.1 version of your app. And that's what the last bullet talks about. We did a bunch of work as a developer so that you can get better analytics on the different markets that are using your app, what parts of your app you're using, but and a much better job of getting you the analytics you need. Last slide in 25 seconds is we did a set of work to improve touchpads, which is not is good for both desktop apps as well as store apps. And effectively, we added support for basically a bunch of gestures in the touchpad, which includes being able to use your finger to do the equivalent of a touch-based pan. And we did single finger and two finger pans. We also did, now you can use on a touchpad, you can do pinch, you can swipe in from the right, the left, and from the top to do app bar type stuff. And I think with that, sorry, it was a really quick whirlwind of, again, 80 sessions condensed into 75 minutes. And with that, thank you. I am going to stick around to take questions because I know I probably left you with more questions than answers. But again, thank you for showing up for my session.